Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Soon, fiduciary responsibility will be the law. A fiduciary is legally and ethically obligated to act in the best interest of their client. Being a registered investment advisor, KPP Financial has carried out this responsibility for its clients for many years. Do you have questions about fiduciary responsibility? Send a note. Click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com. And now, today's InvestTalk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, May 25th, 2016 edition of InvestTalk, and this is above average investing for the average investor. That's what we're trying to help you achieve, getting better than average results, because we all know, studies show, the average results are pretty dismal. So we want you to be anywhere from good to great, and we're going to try to help you get there. And the more you listen, the more you apply what we talk about, the closer you're going to probably get to great. Now, life is volatile. I don't know why we'd expect the financial markets to be any different. You know, you go through your ups and downs and your good times and your bad times. Well, so does the market. Now, everyone would prefer a smooth ride, but that's just not what the way life is. You have hiccups, you have good things that happen, bad things that happen, but you keep on trucking on and you hope to improve over the long term, right? Same with the market. Now, one thing about managing your money is that even though we can't ensure clear and easy choices, we can take action that will reduce those ups and downs, that will make you feel comfortable, reduce the bumpiness and the surprises, okay? And the way you do that is by being prepared, understanding the market, understanding risk, understanding reward. Now, volatility refers to the amount of uncertainty or risk about the size of changes in a security's value. Meaning, how much could this particular asset go up or down? A lot, a little, and over what period of time? Almost any asset could decline a lot over an extended period of time, to be honest. But some, you know, can decline very quickly in the matter of weeks or months. A higher volatility means that a security's value could potentially be spread out over a large range of values. Meaning there's a lot more uncertainty when it comes to volatile names than less volatile names. And everyone kind of, I think, hopefully understands that. But volatility isn't just the downside. Everyone thinks volatility, oh, that's the downside. Volatility is not good. Well, it can be great when things are cheap, assets are cheap, and you buy them cheap, and the market starts to realize how cheap they are. Well, the volatility to the upside can be quick, fast, and bring you nice returns. So when market volatility is highest, even small pullbacks are enough to garner fear in investors' minds. Because a small pullback in volatile type of investments can be a big move. And usually is different from one person to the next. You know, that's why we talk about with our clients, we look at their risk profile. We give them a risk questionnaire. We figure out, are they conservative? Are they moderate? Are they aggressive? And then we make sure that their investments are aligned with their risk tolerance so that the volatility they experience, if they do, is within their comfort zone. And that's usually when people get in trouble because they aren't aware of the level of volatility that they are exposed to in their portfolio. Now, there are volatility ETFs or low volatility ETFs out there. There's the S&P 500 low volatility ETF, SPLV. There's the Russell 2000 low volatility, SMLV. It allows you to have some exposure, but only to the low volatile names within those indexes. Now remember, low volatility, when it comes to equities, can be much higher volatility than, say, a high volatile bond holding. So low volatility is in relation to the average asset in that particular asset class. Low volatility doesn't mean no risk. It doesn't even mean low risk sometimes. It just means lower than the average. How do you know how volatile a name is? Well, look at beta. That's a pretty wide, widely used number. You can get it in a lot of websites out there. How volatile a company is using the beta. And beta is how volatile is that particular name compared to the S&P 500. Usually that's the measure. So if it's 1, well, it's as volatile as the S&P. If it's below 1, it's less volatile than the S&P. So for example, if the beta is 0.5, it's 50% less volatile than the S&P. If it's above 1, say it's 2, it's double the volatility as the S&P. And certain stocks, certain types of stocks have low volatility. Think of your toilet paper companies like a Kimberly-Clark or your food companies like a General Mills. They're going to have, tend to be lower volatility than the overall market. Why? Because no matter what the economy is doing, you're still going to need food and toilet paper, right? So might their sales or profitability change in a bad economy? Sure, but not as much as, you know, say an industrial company usually. So diversifying outside of domestic markets will also reduce your risk as well. There's emerging markets, there's EM, IFA. That's developed foreign markets, for example. So there's a lot of ways that you can reduce your risk by just diversifying into other areas. Most people just focus on domestic names, the S&P. Well, I've talked about this many times, and you know, right now the indexing craze is upon us. But I think right now you're starting to see the cracks in it, and the reason you are is because the index has been flat for about a year. So I'm saying, I'm not getting much return out of the indexes. If you're in small caps, you're probably down over the last year. If you're in foreign stocks, you're probably down. A lot of it because of the strong dollar. Well, when you get into rough times, well, active management becomes more important. And that's when it comes to diversifying. Finding other opportunities that aren't just the indexes. So keeping your portfolio volatility to a minimum is a great way to increase your odds of making rational decisions instead of ones based on your emotions. The more volatile they are, your portfolio is, the more you're going to make rash decisions. And that's why we talk about aligning your portfolio with your risk. What type of risk are you able to take, willing to take? And how much are you taking right now? Do you have a question about playing defense against volatile markets? Bring your question or comment to us this hour. Before we go any further, let's check in now with our 24-hour listener line. That's 888-99-CHART. It's our anytime number.
Hi, I have a question for Justin. It's a real estate matter. I wanted to see if you can recommend a good real estate CPA up in the San Francisco area. Thank you, and let me know. I hope I'll listen for the answer on your radio show, or what would be a good resource to get that info. Thank you.
All right, I would go to my website, investtalk.com, click on Contact Justin. That will be an email that goes straight to me, and I will answer that privately. I probably need to ask a few more questions, and we do have CPAs that we work with all throughout California, and I'm sure we can find you a good one that will fit your needs, because every CPA kind of has their own strengths and weaknesses. Now, glad you can spend some time with us today. Don't hesitate to ask any money question that is on your mind for this hour. We encourage you to call sooner rather than later. Try not to wait till the end of the hour. And establishing understanding about your risk tolerance is essential to coming to terms with yourself and your needs and your goals. So why not take our risk analysis test? It is free on investtalk.com. I welcome your call. Give me a call. I want to hear from you. I want to know what's on your mind. 888-99-CHART. Investing in real estate. What's your first step? There's a lot of ways to do it, but there's a lot to know as well. And as a licensed realtor, I kind of understand the ins and outs, the risks and rewards, and I'm not, this isn't all I do, right? So I feel like I have a healthy balance of understanding the positives and the negatives. There's a ton of riffraff in the real estate, realtor market, real estate, professional market, and they're always pushing real estate. Me, I'm not. I don't think anybody should be forced or forcing their way into investing in real estate. So understanding the pros and the cons and finding the opportunities is extremely important, and being patient, just like any investment, make a good rational decision. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that. I also want to discuss robots. I think this is a really good topic, a really interesting topic, and it's something you're going to hear a lot more about. And I think it's going to push our political system, and it's really going to test the will of our people, the will of our politicians, to understand the changes that are going on in our economy, the technological changes that are happening that are going to have an impact on our economy long term. So I want to talk about that. The rise of the robots that are going to replace a lot of jobs. So I'm going to discuss that. One thing I didn't get to on Monday, number one financial regrets for older Americans. What are those? Let's talk about that. And I have some very interesting stats around not saving early enough. And then three reasons not to buy a house just for price speculation. Kind of links to our main talking point. We'll see if I have time for that near the end of the show. Now let's take a quick look, a quick review of today's market. You had the S&P up about 14.5 points. You had the Dow up about 145 points, and the NASDAQ was up 33. Pretty decent couple days in the market. I saw that really the best news today was out of the building sector. You had new building permits. Building permits were up about 5% month over month, which was a decent move, kind of steady. Yesterday, what was the good news yesterday? Oh, that was housing sales were pretty good. And when people buy houses, well, they tend to go buy new furniture and they do a lot of things and they spend a lot of money usually, not just on the house. And so that helps the economy. So we're still kind of in this range. It's threatening to break out of it. We're not quite there yet. And the Fed meeting comes up just in a few weeks. And I think that'll bring a lot of volatility as well. Now, this is Invest Talk. One measure of the relative volatility of a particular stock to the market is its beta. Beta approximates the overall volatility of securities return against the return of a relative benchmark, like I said earlier, usually the S&P. So a quick review so everyone knows what that is. So give me a call. I want to hear from you.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Justin. Raphael from Jersey. Had a couple questions for you guys today. My first one is for the company AbbVie. ABBV, pharmaceutical/biotech. If you guys could take a look at that, I know that a lot of the earnings come from the one drug, Humira, but I think it's traded sideways for so long. Maybe that's a de-risking. Maybe the sentiment has changed. The other thing is that they seem to be on a glide path of increasing their dividend payment, which is way over 3%, maybe even over 4% at this point. And they seem to be committed to consistently raising that dividend yearly. But do you guys know of a website that will show you stats of that dividend increase glide path? I thought I had one time, but I must not have bookmarked it. Okay, guys, I love the show. It's awesome. Thanks. Bye.
All right, let me address the end first, because this can apply to everybody looking at any stock. I always say I think the best site that I've seen for free, I mean, we have a lot of software. I'm looking at a lot of software that we pay for that is more robust and certainly better. But for free, Morningstar.com is fantastic. If you go look up any stock and you go to the key stats, I think that's what it's called. Sorry, actually, it's not Key Stats. The other site that I look at, it's called Key Stats. Key Ratios is what it's called on Morningstar.com. It'll give you a 10-year history of profitability and revenue and earnings and dividend and all that. So it's pretty good. It's not laid out, you know, in a nice chart or anything like that. But if for free, that's a really good place to look up information on individual stock. Okay. Now, AbbVie. This is a company that we have owned, and we recently sold it. I'll tell you that. It closed the day at $61.22. I think we sold it a week or two ago in our income program, our balanced income program. I think we sold it around the 63 level. Don't quote me on that exact number, but I know it was higher than it closed today. We recently sold it. And you talked about it going sideways for a while. And what you're alluding to is consolidation. And a lot of times consolidation can be very good. And consolidation, for everybody out there, is when a stock goes up or goes down and then kind of trades in a range for a while. And that range can be for a day, few days, it can be for a few months, a few weeks, could be even for a few years. It's just consolidation. And usually that's consolidation for a continuation move, meaning whatever it did prior to the start of that consolidation, it's probably going to continue that move. So if it moved down big and sat there and chattered for a long time, it's probably going to continue with that trend and vice versa. Now, AbbVie has been doing very well for many years. And like you said, they have that drug, Camira. And they are kind of relying on it, very similar to the way Celgene is. Celgene, Gilead is with their major drug. And we sold it, though, because we were a little worried about the sector as a whole. Now, AbbVie's a good company. We're a little worried that they are a little more too reliant on Camira. And the fact that I've talked about this recently many times, and I think this is going to apply to this sector as a whole, is there is a growing backlash from Washington, from the general public, on the rise in drug prices. Drug companies are really just taking advantage of the system and just basically, I don't want to say stealing money, but they're just manipulating the price of their drugs higher and higher and higher. And they know that either Medicare, Medicaid, or the insurance companies who are mandated to cover those particular drugs are going to have to pay it. So if you're any business and you know that if you raise your prices, you're not going to lose sales, which is typical in supply and demand situation. You know, you learn in economics class, the higher the price, the lower the sales volume, right? Well, if they know that the volume isn't going to change really, I'm going to raise my prices. I'm going to continue to raise my prices. And so there's a growing backlash against these drug companies, and AbbVie is going to get lumped in with it. So it's still a good company, but I just don't like the sector. Is it undervalued? Maybe a little bit. I would say it's probably at value, to be frank. Good dividend. Yeah, it's been increasing its dividend. Its dividend has gone from, looking at Morningstar now, they started the dividend in 2013. It was $1.60 a share then. Trailing 12 months is $2.10. So they initiated dividend, and they're starting to grow it. And that's good. But I'm not a buyer right here. Like I said, we recently sold it. So I think you can find a better name in a better industry that isn't going to start getting some major backlash from Washington on prices. Now, we're glad you're with us today for InvestTalk. If you'd like to schedule a portfolio checkup with Steve, he's scheduling visits via Skype or telephone for May 31st. If you want to have a meeting with me as well, you can do that. You can do that too on that date. So to get on the schedule, just go to investtalk.com, click on the InvestTalk tab.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast, and remember, no matter where you listen in the United States, you can have your retirement portfolio reviewed by a registered investment advisor at no cost. Steve does a few of these each month on Skype or telephone. To schedule your time with Steve, just click on the InvestTalk tab on investtalk.com. Continue with this Wednesday, May 25th Invest Talk to construct and maintain a retirement portfolio that will meet your goals of financial independence. You'll need to follow a systematic approach. Need some help with that? Talk to Justin about it. 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Give me a call. I have about 25 minutes left in the show, but it's going to go by quick. Now, our main talking point is about how to begin investing in real estate. There's multiple ways you can begin investing in real estate, but true believers say there's nothing like owning a second, third, or fourth property. People that love investing in real estate. But for a beginner, real estate is a different game than it used to be, and it's a different game than buying stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. The things that you might have learned in those arenas a lot of times don't apply to real estate. Real estate investing is more than just an investment. It really should be viewed as a business. It requires time, management, due diligence, and above and beyond most other investments that you would consider. So it's really usually a hands-on in some way kind of deal, right? Even if you have a property manager, major things happen. You could be on the hook. It can be complex. Say that. And now it's different because you are in control. However, so that's the upside. With a company, you invest in a company. Well, if the manager, the executives that you don't even know make bad decisions, that can lose you a lot of money, right? And you have no control over that. But in real estate, you have more control. Control of pretty much all the decisions. The level of finish that you put on the property, how much money you put into items you want to have replaced, repaired. The standards of the tenant that you want to have in there. The rental rate, whatever the rent that you're going to charge is. So there's a lot that you have control over. Now, real estate prices tend to be less volatile than stock prices, generally. Homes, stores, offices, they can't be sold the click of the mouse like a stock or a bond can. They're less liquid, so that's why they tend to be less volatile. People tend to panic in and out of them less. Now you can use leverage. That can be a positive. A lot of people tout the benefits of leverage. And it's true. You can put 10% down and say the price of the property moves 10%. Well, technically, on paper, you've doubled your money. Now, there's that's a positive of leverage. Now, there's downside as well. You could put 20% down, or say, let's go the same number, 10% down. Property price falls 10%. You're now, you lost all of your investment, 100% of your investment. So it goes the other way as well. And I think we all saw that 2007, 2008. It can be great, but it can be bad if you aren't investing at the right price at the right time. And that's why it takes experience. You don't just go and do it. You have to really think it out. There's a lot of carrying costs, a lot more carrying costs than there are for stocks or bonds or mutual funds. And what's the cost? Maybe a mutual fund or ETF has an expense ratio. It's a carrying cost. There's unforeseen events that you might have to pay for. A new air conditioning, a flood, whatever it is. So there's a lot of other types of risk when it comes to real estate investing. Now, how can you invest? Well, you can buy a vacation home. And in today's day and age, it's a lot easier to make pretty good money on it. You know, with Airbnb and VRBO and ways to rent out these vacation homes, you can make a substantial return on your money. Now, you know, we're seeing cap rates of 9, 10, 12% sometimes, meaning the yield that's coming off of these vacation rentals right now per year. Now, what you have to understand is, you know, economy's decent right now. Consumers are spending. They're going on vacation. They're flying places. They're willing to rent out properties. Well, if you go into recession, prices and rental incomes can plunge with the economy. When people are saying, you know, are staycationing more because they don't have the money. Okay? So understand that you can invest in a vacation home. Now you can use it, that's an upside. You might like that. But understand that the rental income is going to be more volatile. Okay? Then you can buy a full-time rental. That's pretty straightforward. You could flip. I don't recommend that unless you have a lot of experience or you're doing it with somebody that has a lot of experience. Can be even more risky. I think the best is investing in your own home. Remodel your own home. Redo things in your own home that you know eventually, if you have to sell it, will yield you more value. And in the meantime, you can enjoy it. And the simplest, most hands-off way, is to invest in a real estate investment trust. You know, the market is publicly traded, not a private REIT. Public REIT. Now let's take a quick text question. The question is, the app Robinhood.com claims to be free trading fees. How are they making money? Should I be aware of anything about this app? I have heard about it a little bit. I haven't researched it extensively, but I understand the basic concept of it. Now, I do know that it's not full service or anything. I don't think there's many people you can call up and ask questions if you have questions. On a particular stock, they don't have like researching tools like you might have with Fidelity or Scottrade or TD Ameritrade or whatever. So you'll have to do your research somewhere else. So it's not full service like you would normally consider. And they're making their money off of your cash usually. And all brokerage firms do this, but they also make money on commissions. On commissions. Well, Robinhood.com says they're not going to charge you any commissions. Well, they're going to make money off your cash. So that's how they're making money. But understand that you're not going to get full service. It might not be the best experience. I haven't used it. I can't tell you. But I know that they don't give you the full suite of robust investing tools that you might have somewhere else. Now let's take another text question. Says, can you give us your thoughts on CSAL, communication, sales, and leasing, as a 6 to 12 month investment? I like the end of that because he's giving me a time horizon and not just that's always important when you're looking at any investment, is what is your time horizon. Now, CSAL is the symbol. This is communication sales. This is a REIT that owns, acquires, and leases communication distribution systems in the United States. So it sounds like a tech REIT. Let me make sure that's ownership. It sounds more like a tower, cell phone towers, I think. It's not a great value, I'll tell you that much. Yields 9.7%. Fundamental score, I have a 3 out of 10. It's not that great. Their dividend yield, I guess they just announced it. This one's complex because it's a relatively new issue. It just came out middle to early part of last year. So it's certainly a new issue. It's jumped recently from about $15 a share all the way up to $24.70. A good momentum. You know, with that move, that's good momentum on the name. So if you're looking at it for 6 to 12 months, I would say that's actually pretty good because it's now had a strong reversal. It's kind of consolidated that reversal that it had in February and March. But it's certainly going to be volatile. It's a new issue. So that always worries me. New issues tend to be overvalued, and this looks to be no different. So what I would say is have a tight out on it, maybe 10-12%, and ride it. For 6-12 months, I think you could have decent momentum on CSAL. Now, as we enter an unpredictable summer with expected volatility, many investors flock to or stay invested in large cap branded companies. Now, InvestTalk insiders can see our brand new list of overvalued companies. Is a company you hold in your portfolio on that list? Well, you can have access to it. You can sign up for free on investtalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab.
It just costs 1 hour of your time. A retirement review. Getting a second opinion about your accounts and your direction. Steve is in San Jose today for these individual one-hour informal meetings, but there's another opportunity coming up next week. You can meet with Steve via Skype or telephone on May 31st. To schedule your time, just go to investtalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab.
Let's go to John in San Francisco. How are you doing, John?
Hey, yes. Hello.
How are you doing?
Yeah, okay. I wanted the opinion of Philip Morris. Is it good to hold or is it good to sell?
Well, we had owned Philip Morris for a while. I would say a little over a year on Philip Morris. Pays a good dividend. I think its dividend yield right now is about 4%. But we recently sold it. Right now it's trading at $99 a share. I want to say we sold it around the $100 level. I think about 100, 101, somewhere in there. It's a little overvalued at this point. You know, we bought it, I want to say, in 20-something percent lower. I can't, don't quote me on that. I don't remember the exact number. But something like that. I think it was in the 80s where we bought it, and we sold around 100. Got a nice dividend to it and all that. But we recently sold it because we feel like it is kind of getting expensive, kind of topping out. The technical indicators are weakening, and it really hasn't done a whole lot since we sold it. So it gives me the indication that we made the right decision, and it's probably a better time to sell it. It's a great company to have in your watch list. I really like it, especially because I think globally incomes are rising. And Philip Morris International PM, that's their business, their international business, cigarette business, right? So when the growth in cigarette smokers here is declining, or at least the number of users here are declining, but globally it's actually increasing. So that's why I like Philip Morris. Good dividend, safe dividend, anti-cyclical, all that. Great to have in your watch list, but I think at these levels it's a little rich.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, John. That was Philip Morris. PM is the symbol. Now, I want to talk about a trend that is going to only intensify. And what I'm talking about are robots. And it recently came out that Apple and Foxconn have replaced 60 1,000 human workers with robots in one of their factories in China. That was reported today by the South China Morning Post. Actually, it was over the weekend. But roughly 600 companies are reportedly looking to reduce headcounts with robots as part of an effort to accelerate growth and reduce costs, improve profitability. Last year, 35 Taiwanese companies, including Foxconn, spent a total of 4 billion yuan, or $610 million, on artificial intelligence as a part of this initiative. Now, there's obviously an upfront cost with robots, but over the long term versus humans, they're a lot more predictable and stable. So over time, it will reduce personnel costs over the long term. Now, Foxconn has recently been criticized for bad working conditions, and they've been taking steps to improve it, but that obviously costs money. And so the trend is to replace low-skilled workers. Now, and this isn't just in China. As of February, more than 260,000 robots were working in U.S. factories. 31,464 robots were purchased last year, worth $1.8 billion in North America. That's a 14% increase from the previous year. Amazon is using them extensively in their warehouses. If you ever watched, I watched a special on it. What the robots do is they have certain systems where it allows a robot, which is very short, has wheels on it, very short. It goes underneath the shelves and where they're looking for a particular product that's stored there. And it lifts it up and it takes it to a worker. And they take it out of the shelf and they package it up. So workers don't have to go search around a warehouse to find what they need to send to Amazon customers. They just stay in one place and the robot brings all the stuff to them. So Amazon has been doing this for years. And this is only going to continue. And a White House report says there's an 83% chance that automation will take a job with an hourly wage below $20. A 31% chance they will take a job with an hourly wage between 20 and 40, but just a 4% chance automation will take a job with an hourly wage above 40. Now you might say they're going to take all of our jobs. It's going to make our lives worse. Well, the findings also demonstrate that higher levels of robot density within an industry leads to higher wages overall in that industry. So the headcount might go down, but the actual salary within the average salary within that industry actually goes up. So what this says is we need to train go to our politicians. It's not about bringing jobs back. It's about training our current workers for higher skilled jobs, and we will do much better as a country. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm registered investment advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Chris in San Jose. How you doing, Chris?
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Justin. A question, you had mentioned REITs, and I wanted to ask your thoughts on the wisdom of having a specific REIT, HCN, Henry Charlie Nancy, in my Roth IRA, and mm-hmm. if it is a good idea, are there any other similar or other REIT-like investments that should be thought about?
I do like HCN. It's one of my favorite REITs out there as a company. I don't think it's rallied from the low 50s. I hit a high in the low 70s just earlier this month, and now it's in the high 60s. I do think it's about valued at these levels. It's not a great value here. But if you're looking to hold it long term for that dividend, I think it's a pretty good one. And I think within your Roth, it's very good because the dividend is tax your ordinary income tax rate. But if it's within an IRA, a Roth or a traditional or a 401k, you're not paying that tax. So I think it is a good one to hold in your Roth.
Thank you, Jeff.
Okay, no problem. Let's go to Simon in Fremont. How you doing, Simon?
How's it going, Justin? Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. Can do
I'm
for
calling about energy transfer.
today because it took a dip. So what do you think about the dip, about getting in?
Ooh, you're looking at ETE?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I would not be buying this. I know you're probably looking after that dividend, right? That 10.2% dividend.
Well, yeah, but I was just mainly looking at it. It looked like it had a value because it dropped over 10% today.
Well, it dropped over 10%. Let me see if there's any news on it. Let's see. Effective. There's something, some news on it. I would have to look into that a little bit more. My worry with Energy Transfer Partners is they have a ton of debt. This is a company that is in very, very high risk of going bankrupt. Okay.
Ooh,
so I would not be buying this. I'm not saying they're going to go bankrupt, but they have a ton of debt. They're burning cash like crazy. I don't think that dividend is safe at all. Their payout ratio is 300%, but their cash dividend payout ratio, meaning how much cash are they producing to pay that dividend, whereas a payout ratio is about earnings, which can be manipulated. Cash is hard to fake, right? Well, their cash dividend payout ratio is -62%, meaning they have negative cash flow. So they're not going to be able to afford that dividend in the long run, and they're carrying a lot of debt, ton of debt, and they have negative book value, negative $1.61 a share, negative book value, and it's trading at $11. So to me, I would stay far away from this. It could be volatile. It might jump, you know, randomly in the short term or whatever, but this is not a name that you want to be aggressively buying.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for calling, Simon. That was ETE Energy Transfer Equity. That's what it's called. So before we close, I want to get to the number one financial regret of older Americans. Now, most Americans are filled with regret, usually financial regret, and 3 in 4, in fact, admit they have some financial regret. And that they've surveyed over 1,000 adults. This is Bankrate.com. And this is the list from top to bottom. Number one, not saving for retirement early enough. That's 18%. Not saving enough for emergency expenses, 13%. Taking on too much student loan debt, 9%. Taking on too much credit card debt, also 9%. Not saving enough for your child's education, 8%. And buying a house bigger than they could afford, that's 3%. Now, this is big because here's a very interesting statistic, okay? If you just start saving $300 a month at 25, assuming a 5% rate of return, which isn't that dramatic, you will have $450,000 by the age of 65, despite only contributing $144,000. Now, if you waited 10 years till 35 and you did the same thing, you will only have $250,000 at retirement and contribute $108,000, okay? Now, this is the stat I love the most. Where was it? Oh, here we go. By the age of 30, you should have your entire salary saved. Okay? By the age of 40, you should have 3 times your salary saved. And by the age of 50, you should have 6 times your salary saved. So use that as a rule of thumb to understand whether you are on track and saved enough for retirement. Now, our time is up. I want to tell you about a useful info sheet that could be of help to you. 10 questions to ask when picking an agent. A real estate agent can cost or save you thousands of dollars, and you have instant access to this useful document when you sign up for free to be an InvestTalk insider on InvestTalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab. I'm Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for listening today. Let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing.